Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Okay, welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2012 film Zero Dark Thirty, directed by Kathryn Bigelow. So this is not the most uplifting movie we've watched.
I'm curious as to why you thought it might be uplifting.
I don't know. I guess I expected to be cheering at the end, and this was not that kind of movie.
No, it's not. So this was, you picked this movie. I'm curious as to why this made it onto your list to watch and chat about.
Well, it was on your a list, I think, originally, and I had wanted to see it, and I like Jessica Chastain, especially after, you know, things like Take Shelter. And I think, Mama? Is she in Mama?
I believe she is.
Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be fun. And, you know, it's roughly a recent historical, you know. I mean, obviously it's not a documentary.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's chock full of actors that we know and love. So, but hey, let's just dive right in.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. So, the film opens with a black screen and recordings of some of the victims of the 9/11 attacks, including a flight attendant on American Airlines and a voicemail left by a man who worked on the 89th floor of the South Tower.
These are real recordings, right?
Yep. In fact, they were, the filmmakers were criticized by the families of those two individuals for using them without permission.
Oh, that would be troubling. I mean, I didn't think it was distasteful or anything, but that would be an unpleasant surprise.
Yeah, well, it definitely set the mood. I mean, it was really, a good trick. It worked. Especially if you were stuck in a theater where it was black and you just heard the voices. Those are pretty powerful recordings. I listened to, I think, 2 hours of New York Fire Department recordings. It's pretty... just a couple of years after the incident, and they were on free on Audible, and it was, I mean, I still have it. It's very interesting to listen to. I mean, from, just like technical details and procedural things, that was interesting. But also just, you know, the sheer terror of the whole thing really comes home.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we were sort of, we were the right age for that, for 9/11 to really have that emotional impact. We were old enough to understand historical context for what was happening at the time. So, yeah, images or audio like that is really evocative of that day still.
Yeah, and they did a good job picking them. I mean, it really is powerful. You know, tip of the hat. And then it slides right into enhanced interrogation.
Yeah, this movie makes you uncomfortable from the very beginning.
Yeah, yeah, and it can be argued it doesn't let you off the hook at all. I mean, it's not quite Take Shelter, and you kind of know where it's going. At least we know where it's going. But, yeah. It slides right into our characters are in Pakistan, and they're CIA officers, and they only use first names for the most part. So the cast is, first we meet Dan, played by Jason Clark, in a role, I guess, that was supposed to be originally played by Joel Edgerton, but he had to back out from some sort of conflict and then came back to do the little part in the Navy SEALs team.
I think it was the fighter, right?
It might have been.
Warrior? Warrior?
Yeah, could have
Warrior,
been.
Warrior, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's very possible. So, but yeah, anyway, we have Dan, who is putting the enhanced interrogation hurt on one Omar al-Bulaki, played by Reba Kateb.
He's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody did really. I mean, I thought that this movie was very well acted all around.
Yes.
And then we have the very young CIA officer Maya, played by Jessica Chastain, this is her first time on the ground in Pakistan, although she's been working on gathering intelligence on Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden since she began her career. Later, we find out she has pretty much done nothing else but work on this particular case.
Yeah, and the CIA recruited her right out of high school for reasons that she cannot disclose, even to the director of the CIA.
Yes. Played by James Gandolfini in a very John Goodman kind of way. But anyway, so we get a good like half an hour of an enhanced interrogation.
I own you, Omar. You belong to me. Look at me.
If you don't look at me when I talk to you, I hurt you. If you step off this mat, I hurt you. If you lie to me, I'm gonna hurt you. Now! Now, look at me! Look at me, Omar!
Yeah, I started trying to watch this movie when I was doing laundry with the kids running around, and very quickly I decided it was not an appropriate time for me to be watching this movie.
No,
it's... there are some long procedural elements later, which are maybe not very interesting for children, but at least safe to have them in the room. But the beginning is not okay.
No, and even the procedural things are punctuated by some interesting action scenes. This was a very long movie. I found it to be very long, but when I figured out, okay, what they were doing, it kind of makes sense, because at the end it takes you through the actual raid on the compound, and that is just a few minutes shorter than the actual raid took. So,
right.
You know, they're trying to get that part of it down. Which seemed very realistic. The whole thing seemed very realistic.
Yeah, there's nothing about... I think this movie is about the ultimate assassination of Osama bin Laden, but there is no part of the movie that glorifies any process of it.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, because this movie had a lot of... there are a lot of eyebrows raised about this movie. There were people who, including like people like Martin Sheen... And some of the Screen Actors Guild people were opposed to the movie because they said it advocated for the use of torture. And then there were a lot of reviewers that said, no, it was actually by depicting the torture so starkly, it advocated against it. And the writer of the novel and the book and Catherine Bigelow both said, well, no, we were just trying to ride that middle line and let you figure it out on your own. And if that was the goal, I think they did a pretty good job.
It showed it in a way that certainly was designed to make the viewer uncomfortable. And it was always really questionable about whether the information obtained for it was actually good or not. I mean, whatever information they got, they still had to, you know, find other sources to verify it. And, you know, in the case of, the first really important piece of information that they got from the gentleman they were torturing, that came when they were having a very pleasant meal with him. So, which was sort of a, maybe a psychological kind of manipulation, but certainly didn't come under torture.
Well, and that's the thing, is that they showed a couple other attacks that happened after 9/11, like kind of contemporaneous to what they're showing in the film. They had this enhanced interrogation of the first guy. And while that's happening, they show the 2004 Khobar, Saudi Arabia massacre, where four armed men with guns and bombs attacked two oil industry installations and a residential compound in Saudi Arabia. And so they trick their captive into believing that he had said something that allowed them to foil that plot and save many lives. So they're rewarding him with his meal.
Yeah, and this was Maya's idea, because she knew that the physical torture wasn't yielding them the data they needed quickly enough.
Yes. And that's the thing, is that, you know, this is a situation where, I mean, they were kind of ticking bombs. Not literal ticking bombs, although when they showed the 7/7/2005 bombings in London, they were ticking bombs.
Right.
And, of course, this is all in order to try to catch bin Laden. But there's a lot of procedural things in this movie that I thought were interesting, and it slowed it down a little, but I couldn't think of any way to edit it that would make it any, you know, streamlined, but would, you know, still give you the full impact of the film.
The movie did a good job of depicting sort of the mundane nature of intelligence gathering, but also, like you said before, punctuating it with real-world events that were happening and showed how those events impacted the folks like Maya who were gathering the data. I mean, they took it very personally. Like, every time there's another attack, they felt like failures because they hadn't been able to gather the intelligence enough to stop it. And I think the film did a really good job of depicting, you know, that, you know, the how hard they work and how much they have to mine for just little nuggets of information that may or may not be something worth pursuing. And there are real world consequences to their failures.
Oh yeah. And you know, they were dealing with not only managing people but managing money, because this was costing a lot of money.
Yes.
So they end up going, they're finding the name of this alias of this Abu Ahmed, who works as a personal courier for bin Laden. There were some other detainees who corroborated this. All as Maya's looking through these videos, all under some sort of serious interrogation, if not torture.
Right.
In fact, it shows her flying between various black sites where she's talking to prisoners who will, you know, never get out of jail. So that's another thing they don't shy away from, too. I mean, the very first guy they, you know, in the very first scene, she asks whether the guy's ever getting out of jail, and he's like, oh, no, never, ever.
Yeah, that's when she's deciding whether or not she wants to wear a mask when they're interrogating him.
Yeah. So after the London bombings, they end up apprehending this other guy, and they interrogate him, and he continues to deny the name, knowing the name of this courier. And Maya interprets it as his concealing it makes it more likely that it's really, he's really important.
Yeah, she had some weird, like, negative logic. Like, she only caught him lying about two things, or denying two things. One, I think, was the location of Osama bin Laden at an earlier point in time, but I knew he'd been. And the other was the very existence of this Abu Ahmed guy.
And the Pakistan station chief, Joseph Bradley, is played by Kyle Chandler, and he's great. I mean, his character is like, you know, you haven't given me anything. You know, when you come back when you have some real intelligence and, you know, we can really act on it.
Oh, yeah. But my favorite line in the whole movie is when she's kind of giving him her first really big debrief and trying to convince him of the importance of this I will lock my guy. And he says just that, like, this sounds interesting, but you don't actually have anything.
You don't have his real name. You don't have a clue of where he is.
Yes, but we know that he's important. The fact that everybody's heard of Abu Ahmed, but nobody will tell me where he is, suggests that.
Maybe. Detainees could withhold his location for any number of reasons. Perhaps they don't know. Perhaps this Abu is actually a cover story, and he's really a fucking unicorn. But the withholding doesn't reveal what you want it to, does it?
No.
And if you did find him, you don't know that he'd be with bin Laden.
But we don't know what we don't know.
What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
It's a tautology.
It was almost like a Lawrence Fishburne, Jack Crawford moment, where he was like, the fuck does that even mean? And then Dan, this is my favorite line, Dan just mutters, well, it's a tautology. Which I love. I like to mutter that now from time to time.
So yeah, and then, you know, we have this because time moves on. You know, she's sifting through all this data and it's just slow going. But she's fixated on this Abu Ahmed guy, and she and her coworker Jessica survived a hotel bombing in Islamabad in 2008. And she also survives her car being shot up when she's in Pakistan. And at this time, Dan is reassigned. He's burnt out.
Yeah, he can't take it anymore. Especially after they kill his monkeys because they were trying to escape.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that you'd think this would have a psychological trauma on the person doing the interrogation.
Yeah, and it did. I mean, you could tell in Dan.
And I mean, even if it was completely, you know, non-enhanced interrogation, if it was just, you know, mind games interrogation, that would still be a very difficult assignment that you wouldn't want to do for very long.
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting things about Maya. You know, when they first introduced her, they say she came with high recommendations. Washington called her a killer. And she's just a little bulldog or like a little terrier throughout the entire time. Anytime she has a setback or she experiences another attack, it just emboldens her and strengthens her resolve to keep at it. And she does not seem to be suffering the same effects of Dan. She is a single-minded and determined.
Yeah, well, and then it moves to her friend and, again, coworker Jessica ends up getting a really good lead. That series of scenes with Jessica, I thought was really well done, because this is, you know, somebody who's been working at this for a long time, who's finally getting something that's going to really prove to be important.
She's made contact with a doctor who is in the inner circle of Al-Qaeda and seems interested in working for the United States government. So she believes she can turn him such that when he gains access to Osama bin Laden to treat his failing kidneys, that they will have him as an agent of theirs in the room. So she is super excited about it.
Oh, yeah. And this is, again, this isn't going to take place. I mean, the meeting is taking place soon, but the, you know, getting this person close to bin Laden is years down the road.
Yeah. And she's been working him for at least months, if not years.
Yeah.
Already.
Exactly. So, so they meet at Camp Chapman. And unfortunately, and these are all fairly true events, he goes inside the camp under sort of lax security and ends up blowing up a whole bunch of CIA agents and other military people. And this is as we are an hour into the movie. And my notes have, you know, from now on, this is basically like a Tom Clancy movie, because it goes... it goes right into the legwork now. Now she's, Maya is even more determined.
Well, she's pretty despondent after her friend is killed in that attack. Then she gets one more lead that she wasn't expecting. Because right after the attack where her friend was killed, she also got information that Abu Ahmad was dead.
Yes, by a person who claimed that he personally buried him in 2001.
Right, so that meant all of her leads are pretty much gone.
Yeah, and she's been chasing a ghost for 9 years.
Right.
Yeah, but then out of the blue, this analyst, I guess, researching archives, comes to her and says, "Hey, I think I know who your guy is." And she at first doesn't believe it and says it doesn't really matter. And then looks at it and says, well, maybe. So she gets with Dan, and Dan uses some CIA funds to purchase a Lamborghini for a Kuwaiti prince in exchange for the telephone number of this guy Saeed's mother.
Yeah, so now that Maya has finally tracked down Abu Ahmed's family name and determined that it was actually one of his brothers who had been killed and buried, now she starts working with family to try and track down the courier.
And again, she uses these sort of, negative findings that they trace the calls to the mother, but one caller avoids detection. And that leads her to believe that it's not by accident. It's just tradecraft. So he must be a bad guy. He must be the guy.
Right. And did you recognize the field agent who she was giving a really hard time to for not deploying forward operatives?
Oh, yeah. Choco?
Choco, yeah.
Yeah.
Who also is going to be the new Bodhi in the Point Break remake.
Oh, I've never seen Point Break.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you... Wow. Okay.
At some point, I'll have to.
Yeah, we should put it on the calendar.
Yeah.
That movie is fantastic.
Like Roadhouse Fantastic?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm sure extremely, like, very 90s.
Oh,
I'd be great.
Yeah, well, I think my favorite speech of the movie comes next when the Kyle Chandler character is having, or Maya is having, a conversation about getting authorization to follow up on these phone leads. And she needs like two teams to go into these two cities in Pakistan and try to find this phone or this guy using this phone. Yeah. So she and the senior field agent, what is his, station chief, have a very tense conversation where she basically reads him the riot act and paints him into a corner.
Hey, I really need to talk to you about beefing up our surveillance operation on the collar.
We don't have a surveillance operation on the collar. Someone just tried to blow up Times Square, and you're talking about some facilitator who some detainee 7 years ago said might have been working with Al-Qaeda?
He's the key to bin Laden.
I don't fucking care about bin Laden. I care about the next attack. You're going to start working on the American Al-Qaeda cells. Protect the homeland.
Bin Laden is the one who keeps telling them to attack the homeland. If it wasn't for him, Al-Qaeda would still be focused on overseas targets. If you really want to protect the homeland, you need to get bin Laden.
This guy never met bin Laden. This guy's a freelancer working off the fucking internet. No one's even talked to bin Laden in 4 years. He's out of the game. He may well even be dead. He might as well be fucking dead. But you know what you're doing? You're chasing a ghost while the whole fucking network goes all around you.
You just want me to nail some low-level mullah crackadullah so you can check that box on your resume that says while you were in Pakistan, you got a real terrorist. But the truth is, you don't understand Pakistan, and you don't know Al-Qaeda. Either give me the team I need to follow this lead, or the other thing you're going to have on your resume is being the first station chief to be called before a congressional committee for subverting the efforts to capture or kill bin Laden.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going on so long now that the political winds have shifted. This is now after Abu Ghraib. I don't remember if Obama had been elected yet or not, but the political landscape was certainly changing. They were not doing enhanced interrogation anymore. And what he told her is that nobody even cares about Bin Laden anymore.
Exactly, because no one had even heard from him in 4 years or something.
Right, and this did not sit well with her.
No. But his priorities have moved. You know, he even says, you know, they've just tried to set up a bomb in Times Square. So he tries to say, you know, you got to work the homeland. She's like, this is how we work the homeland.
Yeah. My favorite part of the scene is she is screaming at him in the hallway with a profanity-laced tirade that ended with a threat to essentially call him out in front of a congressional hearing as not doing his job. And then when he finally walks away, this is what I loved. He had to go walk into a meeting room where the door had been open the whole time. everybody heard her pretty much just chop his balls off. And then he had to walk in and everybody pretended like they didn't hear.
And it's great. His performance, I think, is great because he gives that feeling that yeah, he's going to end up doing what she wants, but he doesn't like any part of it. And yet is not going to, you know, scream back at her. Cause that wouldn't work either.
Right. Yeah. And you can't hit a woman.
Well, not in 2010. Right. Yeah. I appreciate, she says that he just wants to arrest some sort of, mullah crocodola.
Yes.
Which makes me laugh. So, anyway, so then we go after she ends up getting the reluctant support of his supervisor. She and Choco end up searching for our bad guy. And they end up, again, through Tom Clancy methods.
There's a great scene where they have this guy's cell phone numbers or whatever, his signal. So whenever he talks on it, they can track it. And there's a great scene where they're trying to track him in this market, and they can't quite figure out where it is, but they know what direction it is. So Choco just gets out of the vehicle and starts walking through the market looking for this some dude on a cell phone. And it's just such an emotionally depleting shot of him walking through this sea of people where, you know, 8 out of 10 people are walking around talking on a cell phone. And, that just shows, it was such a good demonstration of how difficult it is to try and track this guy down. And, you know, presumably this is what they're doing every day, all day, for weeks and months. You know, he's just looking through all these people, just trying to find something.
Even when they track this guy, they finally find out who he is, or they don't find out who he is, but they track him, and they end up tracking him to this compound in Abbottabad near the Pakistan Military Academy. And actually, this is the point where she's leaving her residence and they shoot up her car, and they send her back to D.C. because she's not safe. Because now Al-Qaeda has her targeted also. But in the meantime, the CIA puts the compound under heavy surveillance, using all sorts of cool Tom Clancy methods. And all they have is circumstantial evidence. They can't prove it photographically. They can't get anybody in there. They, at one point, they go seek the advice of, I guess, a national security advisor called the Wolf, who just so happens to be a Muslim.
The Wolf was the guy who gave Dan the financing to buy the Lamborghini.
Oh, okay. Sorry. The Wolf is not the security advisor.
Right.
Okay.
The security advisor is the dude who plays Stannis Baratheon on Game of Thrones.
And there's a good scene there where they were talking about the politics of it all.
Yeah. The two British actors trying to pull off American accents.
Yeah. Wow. So they have to find a way. Okay, if you were going to do this, how would you do this? So that's when they build a life-size mock-up of the compound in Area 51 and use these stealth helicopters and SEAL Team 6, including Chris Pine and Joel Edgerton. Not Chris Pine? Who am I thinking of?
Chris Pine is the dude who plays the new Kirk.
Oh, who am I thinking of? Oh, Chris Pratt.
Pratt, yes.
Not Chris Pine, Chris Pratt.
Yeah, but before they even started with the SEALs, they had a great series of scenes where they're trying to convince the National Security Advisor and the Director of the CIA that Osama bin Laden was in that compound. And they had all these sort of bureaucratic analysts with this ridiculous bullshit percentage estimates. Like there's a 35% chance of bin Laden, is a 40% chance that it could be a Saudi drug dealer. It is ridiculous. It's just, assigning precise-sounding statistics to something that is totally subjective. And I can imagine people actually speaking like that, and it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can too. Yeah. And, of course, she says, no, it's 100%. It's him. I know it's him. It's got to be him.
Yeah, she even calls him out on it. She has a great line where she says, 100% it's bin Laden, but since everyone here is so uncomfortable with certainty, we'll say 95, but it's 100.
Yeah. And Leon Panetta, or who is, James Gandolfini is basically playing, likes her moxie. And actually, when they first meet, she says, and who are you? And she says, I'm the motherfucker that found him for you.
She's great.
Yeah.
She seems like she'd be really unpleasant to work with, but she's great.
Yes. Yes. that is absolutely true. Yeah. So the raid, it gets approved. Even though, by the way, it doesn't really mention it too much. I guess this is a bigger deal in the book that, her idea was just to drop a bomb on him. She didn't want the SEALs involved, but that's why she basically says, look, you're the canaries. If he's there, you're going to kill him for me. But if he's not, you're going to sneak away.
Right.
So, and then I put in my notes from this point on, this is all Black Hawk Down and gives that same kind of feeling, at least for me, for watching it, as Black Hawk Down, where you're kind of, you've got the tension of the mission.
Yeah. Even though I knew the outcome, even the first time I watched the movie, if you followed the news at all, you know exactly what is going to happen. But it's shot so effectively and in such a way that it there's still just tons of tension during the raid. And there's nothing, this is the ultimate victory, the single victory that we can point to in our war on terror. And there is nothing glorious in the depiction of this raid. I mean, it's terrible for everybody involved. When it's over, it's a sense of relief. It's not a sense of victory.
Yeah. Without even the politics involved, this is simply a hunt to kill this guy, and then anybody in the way is just collateral damage.
Yeah. And there are multiple families living in this compound with wives and children. And to his credit, the movie does not shy away from depicting the impact of the raid on those wives and children.
Oh yeah. Not letting Osama bin Laden off the hook, of course, but everybody else in the building that gets shot is just straight up murdered. I mean, they go into the house and shoot up the place.
Yeah, and there are bin Laden's children crying for him.
Yeah. Yep. And it riles up the neighborhood.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And Chris Pratt has to shoot a woman who was probably unarmed and was probably just trying to hug her murdered husband in front of her, but may have been reaching for his weapon.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That doesn't sit well with him, that he had to put her down. But, you know, with everything moving so quickly and so many threats around, he did what he had to do.
I mean, and even, what is it, Joel Edgerton who actually takes out Obama? Or also Osama bin Laden?
No. He's the one that identifies the body.
Oh, okay.
But it was another CEO. Because he went down and was talking to Pratt about it.
Yeah.
And they were bagging up all the hard drives and stuff.
And it's like he didn't seem very happy about it either. Hey, he was in shock.
He was in shock, and he also knows that if the folks in Al-Qaeda or people who support Al-Qaeda ever find out his name, he will be one of the most wanted men in the world.
Oh, yeah. He and his family and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's... yeah. So, and then they bring back bin Laden's body to the base in Jalalabad, and they bring back a bunch of paperwork and hard drives and other intelligence. And one of the copters crashes, which is what happened, at least in the initial raid. But the end of the movie doesn't let us off the hook either, because Maya, even though this is her thing, and she goes...
Yeah, this should be her triumph.
Yeah. She goes and visually identifies the body and confirms that it's him. And then we're last seeing her boarding on a military transport all by herself. And she just starts to cry.
Yeah, I mean, the guy on the plane tells her that she must be very important because she's the only one on the manifest, and asks her where she wants to go, and then she gets that look on her face. She has no idea, because this is all she's been doing.
Exactly. Exactly, so.
Yeah, and it is not a glorious moment for her. It's really sad.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think if that's what it's trying to do, it did a great job doing it. I guess war is complex.
Yeah, no, I thought it did a really good job. I mean, I really enjoyed the procedural elements of it. I mean, there was a great series of scenes where she was so frustrated that it was taking so long to get approval for a raid or for a bombing that she started writing the number of days in red dry erase marker on the wall of her boss. And it got to, 130 days or so? So
yeah.
She must have been a total pain in the ass for 4 months.
Well, and her boss told the other guy that was visiting, when he says, oh, she's a bulldog. And he's like, you have no idea.
Yeah, that was when he was talking to the wolf.
Yeah. So I thought it was well acted. I thought it was visually pretty interesting, and I mean, pretty is a hard word, because there's not, it's mostly gritty scenes, like low lighting and like, you know, that contrasted with sort of stark white offices.
Yeah, I thought this movie was great. I mean, it didn't really pull any punches. I don't interpret it as being like a giant propaganda piece. Like, even the moments where you're supposed to cheer as a patriot that we finally got one of the biggest enemies of our state, it's not fun to watch. And for, you know, depicting a military assassination, it's done pretty relatively tastefully. I mean, they never actually depict bin Laden. They never show him.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
So, you know, that was probably the right choice. But, yeah, I mean, and nobody in the movie really comes out looking great. You know, the bureaucrats, they don't look, they look really almost impotent trying to make a decision. I guess being unwilling to make a decision until they have all the possible information, which they'll never have. So they're just paralyzed until the intelligence is so overwhelming that they can't deny it. Or they'll look even more foolish. So the bureaucrats don't look good. The field agents don't look great with their enhanced interrogation techniques, torture. Probably the SEALs come out looking the best because they're following orders and they do a top-notch job at it. But you can tell that they were happy to get in, get the job done, and get out without suffering major casualties. But they weren't looking forward to this mission, and they didn't really look all that thrilled when it was over.
Yeah, because they've got another one down the road, too.
Right. There's that really, really telling scene when they're on their way in, and somebody asks, has anybody here ever been in a helicopter crash? And they all raise their hand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hilarious. That's the thing, and she doesn't really come out looking like a hero, even though she's our main character.
Yeah, I mean, I loved watching her work, but she really seems like a broken human being and, like almost a non-functioning person.
Yeah.
Because she is so single-minded, which meant she was great at her job. And, that was fun to watch. And it was really interesting to have the lead in a movie like this be female. So that's always... That always adds a layer of complexity. It's nice to see. It was effective. That was a very effective movie.
Yep, and it's a good. I think it did a good job. Again, you said not pulling punches about the controversies of the time. And, it's hard. It's a 2012 movie. It's only 2015. I mean, it was only 3 years ago, the controversies of the time. The raid happened in 2011, so it's still not very long after that actually happened. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean.
Have you read any articles or read the book about the raid?
No, I did not.
There's a pretty good article. I want to say it was in Esquire. A year or two ago, I guess after the movie came out, it was reportedly written by the guy who actually shot Bin Laden. And it was a bit of a long form article, but it was really super interesting. I recommend searching it out. He talked about the raid. He talked about the movie. He said the movie was definitely Hollywooded up, as he put it. Yeah, understandably, to make action more accessible to the viewer, but he said there were silly things in there, like yelling for the breacher, the guy to come in and breach the door. He said they would never yell out; they would just use silent hand signals.
Yeah,
they wouldn't. But nitpicky things like that. But the article was about how his life has changed. So it's more of a global article about, what it's like to be a member of special forces. Because they don't get paid that much. They have much higher rates of debilitating and chronic injuries. But at the same time, they don't have anything that they can put on their resumes for after they get out of the service because everything's classified. So they often have a hard time finding their way in life. After they get out, they're kind of like professional athletes who have a really short shelf life to begin with. So, sometimes their only choice to keep food on the table is to go back and, for the private type companies that do similar work. And that's not a great choice either.
No, not really. It doesn't sound...
But it's a really good article. I recommend seeking it out.
Okay, Esquire. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, I would think that if you Googled Esquire and Man Who Killed Bin Laden, it'd pop up pretty quickly. Okay. There was also an article that came out just like a week or so ago about a reporter who claims that the entire narrative that this movie is based on is fiction. Have you been following that at all?
Yeah, the Seymour Hersh.
Yeah.
I just actually, I don't remember where it came up. I think it must have been an anniversary of the My Lai massacre. And he was the reporter, I think, that broke that story. And so I ended up watching some documentaries on that piece of business. And so it was interesting to see that, you know, he believes that Osama bin Laden was actually sort of being held as a prisoner of the Pakistanis. And it's their security forces that enabled the Navy SEALs to go up and just kill him. It wasn't a matter of kill or capture. It was just a matter of they're going to let us assassinate him. But it seems like his peers, Seymour Hersh's peers, talk about the fact that he's kind of a crank and relies a lot, in this case, on like one unnamed source and not a lot of other sources to help, you know, narrow that down and confirm things.
Right. Yeah. No, it doesn't seem very plausible. I have a hard time believing that a conspiracy this complex would ever survive.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to know what to believe.
True.
I don't have a lot of... Yeah.
The movie's it's still a work of fiction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't claim to be anything else. I mean, you know, the real Maya, I think... she has maybe since retired as the equivalent of a general. I guess one of the criticisms was that it wasn't so much, for the movie, they kind of turned up the volume on the single CIA agent working against a massive bureaucratic machine trying to buck the system to make things work. More like she was just really good at her job.
Yeah, there's a... I don't remember if it was in the same Esquire article or the article I was reading, but it talked about how she was really hated by her peers. And even after like the entire section got like a commendation for the work to track down Bin Laden, she sent out an email to everybody saying something like, none of you deserve this because you were all naysayers along the way. I'm the only one who believed in this the entire time. So you guys can pretty much all kiss my ass.
Oh, nice. Oh, she's not probably going to be great around the company picnic.
I'd love her to have like an awkward conversation with Will Graham. That seemed like it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I'm only like, I think maybe one episode into season two, maybe two episodes in. And I commented to Jason that, have they ever telegraphed a dream sequence so many episodes ahead? Because that was my reaction to the opening of season two, episode one.
Oh, the fight?
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see where it goes.
Isn't that just a banana's way to open the new season?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm interested in see where it's going to go. And season three already started, is that right?
Yep. Watched the first episode.
Sweet.
Great.
Excellent. So, cool. Anything else?
No. It was a great movie. It was a long movie. Difficult to fit in. I actually finished the last part of the raid while I was sitting at the airport waiting to board the plane.
Well, that's, yeah. And again, I was looking at ways to pare it down, but you really needed the raid at the end to be as long as it was, and the parts to get you there were important, so. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.